Thank you for coming. I want to acknowledge Councilman Kespel and Councilwoman Hoppe for being here. I'm going to announce a proposal. This is a proposal only. It is a proposal that obviously has very little input at this point from the City Council, and it's a proposal that has had some input from city staff, but again, this is only a proposal. I'm announcing a proposal that I'm calling Fast Cat. It's the result of discussions that we've had with the Transit Task Force last year, discussions we've had with community stakeholders, and it's also the result of discussion that several of us have had with the owners of Brookside Apartments. We've had several meetings with the owners of Brookside Apartments. Started out as meetings over a land use and zoning, and the meetings have evolved into the use of transit to move students around. Councilman Kespel attended one of the meetings. City Manager Mathis has attended a couple of the meetings, and Councilman, I think that's the only other councilman that was, oh yeah, Fred Schmidt was at one of the meetings. Thank you for prompting me, Gary. This proposal may be controversial. There may be criticism that we're focusing too much on students. There may be controversy that we are showing that we are, this is too favorable to the owners of Brookside. Nonetheless, this is a proposal, and it will move forward based on the commitment of the council and the city staff to this. A brief recap of where we stand with transit as it now stands in Columbia. Transit's tough. Buses are tough throughout the country. Systems lose money. Systems require public subsidies, sometimes substantial public subsidies. It's difficult to make them pay for themselves. Columbia's transit system, like these others I mentioned, is in the same situation. These are the financials as they existed last year at this time. I think the city manager feels like we withheld these financials from him until he signed his contract. But as you can see, a year ago, the transit system was operating on substantial subsidy. It gets, you know, just short of a couple million years as its share of a transportation sales tax. We have a half-cent transportation sales tax in Columbia. There are federal grants and subsidies that that play into it. And our fares contributed only $1.8 million a year to the operation of the system. And last year at this time, we were losing $1.5 million a year that we were drawing out of a reserve fund that has gone from $2.5 million to zero. And this was confronted in last year's budget cycle with some cuts in service and some fee changes to try to get through to the next year. Other metrics to show how challenging this is. If you divide our budget by the number of riders we have, you know, it works out to, it's costing us over $3 a ride. And, you know, our average fare per ride is 77 cents. The average public subsidy is $1.77. Now, the loss per ride has been mitigated because of the budget process we went through. But this is the challenge we face right now. The financials are really, really tough. And, you know, I have to talk about paratransit. It's a necessary service on several different grounds. But the paratransit service in Columbia is extraordinarily expensive. We serve 27,000 riders a year, and it costs $1.2 million. The math is $44 a ride. Ames, Iowa. I use Ames, Iowa a lot in my comparisons because they have very detailed benchmarks that go back into the mid-70s. It's a very vibrant, very successful system. And so for me, it's easy to use them as a benchmark. They provide paratransit service for $14 a ride. Now, they have 11,500 riders as opposed to our 27,000 riders. So they have 40% of our ridership, and they have 60% of our population. So it's at least not out of scale. The point is that we need to look at ways of running paratransit more efficiently. One of the models that we see, let's put more money into transit. I don't think that's the problem, and as we get into that, I'll explain how I think we can get around that. You know, making up for a $1.5 billion deficit, well, you can do it. You can lay off 15 firefighters. You can lay off 15 police officers. You can eliminate city social service spending. We could ask for a tax increase. Now, we already are paying a transportation sales tax. We could ask for an increase in that. Obviously, we could decrease street maintenance. And the point here is that those things are just not going to happen. I mean, citizens are not going to support decreasing street maintenance. And what we've been forced to do through the last budget cycle is to decrease service and to increase fares. And as we look down the road, as the city manager shows us the projections for city transit in the years ahead, we see widening deficits. And without a change in strategy, without a change in approach, these increasing deficits will be met by decreasing service and or decreasing fares. And obviously, the catch-22 here is the more you increase fares, the fewer riders you get. So that's the challenge we face. So I don't know that this is arguable. The current transit system's finances, as they currently exist, are frankly not sustainable. And if the finances are not sustainable, the current transit system is unsustainable. And, this, again, not unusual around the country, but this is Columbia. And for me, I look at this and the word crisis comes to mind. We have to react. We'll talk some more about the transit system. This is an oh my God map, right? But it shows that we have a fairly complex system, a lot of different routes. We have a lot of different areas to cover. I think there are substantial opportunities for improvement in these routes, and we'll be spending some time on that. And you can see that I will point out that the focus of the system is Wabash Station. Where there is a confluence of all these routes. And the theme of what I'm going to present is this. Wabash Station is a beautiful facility. It is not the center of economic activity for Columbia. It is not the center of human activity in Columbia, and I think we need to focus on that. The center of activity for Columbia, Missouri is the University of Missouri. We're a college town. That's why we're here. This is the center of activity for Columbia, not Wabash Station, and we're going to have to deal with that. You're going to see this slide three times in this presentation. This simply takes the number of riders, divides it by the population of the community. It's rides per capita. Springfield is 7 rides per capita. Jeff City is 10. You know, that's not terribly unusual. You take cities like Topeka, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. You know, they're sitting on 10. Columbia is 20, but Columbia, that is an overstatement because we are counting rides that we give on a contract with the university for students who park their cars at Reactor Field, Hearns, and then ride a bus to Brady Commons. So I would submit that these are not really users of transit. These are automobile commuters. who are being bused from a parking lot to the campus. So this puts us really at 10, you know, we're in the ballpark of 10 rides per capita. Obviously, this is the old question that you get when you're in the fourth grade, what doesn't belong in this picture? And we are not matching Ames, Iowa City, and Champaign. Their ridership is fivefold per capita what ours is. And I think what we have to do is take a good look at that. And we have to come to the conclusion that in other Midwestern college towns, there are willing buyers of transit. There are not willing buyers of transit in Columbia. So the obvious question is, are the buyers different? Is there something fundamentally different about University of Missouri students, the University of Missouri population, the demographics of the University of Missouri different than these other college towns? And I submit there really is not. And I think we have to take to use this information, and we need to look in. We need to ask ourselves, and for me it's a rhetorical question, are we providing the same level of service that these other towns are? There are willing buyers. We are not getting them. The model of providing free transit, you know, I think there are a couple of examples of why that is a model that you really can't rely on. We basically offered, we had contracts with apartments, I don't have that map up, along Old 63. We all know where they are, the big apartment complexes. And we offered them at way below market value. And students were riding these buses, but we lost an enormous amount of money. And that's primarily the reason that our reserve fund has gone dry. We cannot maintain that service. We can't pay for that service. We can't offer free bus service. This is not a service that can be offered for free. This is a service that people are willing to pay for if it's a good enough system. As a matter of scope, we had Tri-Transit Day last week, and we had 3,500 riders. That's great. 3,500 times, if you even go 365 days, that's still 1.2 million riders. That's still only 10 per capita. So the point is, this is not a problem we solve with fares. To get to 100 rides per capita, we're going to need during the school year to have 40 to 50,000 riders a day. That's what it's going to take to meet those benchmarks. So this is not a question of fares. This is a question of service. It's a question of providing a level of customer service. As we look at these college towns, what we see is that they are student-centric. And I know one of the criticisms of this proposal is that we're too student-centric. But, you know, if we can get revenue into the system by serving this broad group of customers, we will need more buses. We will need a broader bus system. We'll have a far more robust and financially sound bus system. That's why the focus is on students. I think we really should use the word customers rather than students to have the proper mindset. We are not charging students a fee. We can't charge students a fee. They are customers. They will either choose to pay for the service or not, and we have to win their service. The routes have to be frequent. The routes have to be reliable. They have to run extended hours. Boulders runs at 2 o'clock in the morning on weekends. That's when the customers are using the routes. That's the service we have to provide. As you know, we had a task force last year to address many of these issues. There were many, it was a fairly broad-based representation on the task force to look at these very issues. We had several goals, and frankly, we haven't met these goals yet, okay? I'm not declaring this a failure. I'm saying the goals have not been met yet. We started the conversation. These goals remain. The Ames CSIRIDE model is one of a broad-based governance. University presence, student presence, city presence, other citizen presence on it. It's a model that, you know, I think still needs to be on the table. The community college collaboration has not really happened. It needs to happen. We have to engage students. We have failed to engage the students. These are not students, these are customers. We have failed to engage our customers. Restructured routes, speed and frequency, service expansion, funding recommendations. And that's what FASTCAT is all about. System as it exists, you know, I mentioned the problem we have with Wabash Station. And to enlarge this, the focus again, Wabash Station, here's the economic and human center of Columbia right here. It is served by the black and gold routes, which we are struggling with financially. It is served by what we call the downtown orbiter, this brown route. The downtown orbiter was set up as a spinoff of a proposal to have a downtown shuttle, or trolley, I guess. We talked about it being a trolley, and we ended up saying, well, we're going to put $200,000 into a trolley for downtown. Well, it really ended up being a subsidy for this route. It's a free route. I don't know what the ridership on this route. I think FASTCAT is a derivative of this. I think you can see that. FASTCAT is different, though, because it's not as long a route. It is a shorter route. All right. As again, we have to have more frequency. FASTCAT's not free. FASTCAT will run more frequently. It'll run later. We'll talk some more about that. I don't want to get ahead of myself. But again, this again is a closer look at what I'm going to call it a customer base. Okay, you know, we're in sales here. We're a customer service organization, the city is. But with transit, we are in sales. We have to capture customers. Here's where our customers live. There's 3,500 customers that live here, and the current system really doesn't address them. It goes out on the Stadium Boulevard down Providence Road. It really misses this population of customers. There's 2,800 students/customers here. We are seeing a growing number of students living in the downtown area, and this is a huge change in the way our city looks and the way it's going to function. This influx of college students into the downtown area. We'll talk some more about that. But this is how FASTCAT, this is from the area from which FASTCAT is derived. So let's take a new approach. You know, we've got a system. Let's admit that it's not working right now. And let's admit there are models out there that do work. So how do we get from where we are to where we want to be? How do we get from 2 million riders a year, let's say it, 10 million riders a year? How do we get there? And we have to start by having a transit system that we know and believe is a valuable service. Now, we have to make it a valuable service. Perhaps we have to market it as a valuable service, but it needs to be a valuable service. Obviously, the lack of customers indicates that a lot of potential customers do not yet believe it is a valuable service. We need to make it a valuable service. As I said before, I believe very strongly there are willing buyers of this service, as demonstrated in other Midwestern college towns. They are out there. They are willing to pay for this service. So I submit we need to, let's act like this is a startup. Let's redesign the system. Let's say, okay, who are our customers? Where do they live? Where do we want to move them? How do we sell our services to them. That's the attitude I think we need to have. And we need to cater to these customers. This is not about us. You know, if they're not riding our buses, that's about us. It's not about them. Getting back again, second time you see this slide. Again, we're really at 10. We need to improve customer service, so we're at 100. That's our goal. So that leads us to FastCat. I'm gonna briefly go over this map, which is a preliminary map. We've drawn it up, and I want to tell you why it's drawn the way it is. First of all, this is a map. This is a route. I can drive in 18 minutes. Now, we've got to stop, right? We've got to let customers on and off. But it's a route. I don't know if you got. Can you all see it? You can't, can you? It's a route that can be accomplished in 30 minutes. It's a route that circulates through areas of heavy student slash customer housing. There's heavy concentrations of student housing here. There's heavy concentrations of student housing over here with Brookside, Stevens College. We have an interest in making this accessible to our private providers. I would also amend this. I would bring this route down. This is the 5th and Walnut Garage. This is Stevens College. This is college right here. We'll get to that. The route starts at the 5th and Walnut Garage. I think it really needs to come down to Elm Street, known as the Bengals Corner. Why? Not for Bengals, but there are two dorms right here. We want to market these dorms. Now, there are those people who believe that students in Columbia will not ride a bus. They will walk the campus. They will not ride a bus. You know, I was a student here. And the fact that I got across campus in the winter, or at night, or to the library, we did go to the library in those days, by bus, I would have done it. Our experience with Ames, Iowa, SciRide, we see students get on the bus and ride it for 2 blocks. I mean, so the premise that students in Columbia will not ride a bus, I'm not accepting that. I mean, they may be right, but I'm not accepting that premise. Up Elm to the key corner here, the intersection, the Shakespeare corner. And then the connecting core, the spine of this system, is the 9th Street University history. This is where the students, this is how they get to class. White campus, red campus. You got Jesse Hall right here. This goes right through the center of the campus. And then, once it gets to Rollins, here's Brady Commons, it swings over. I originally thought it should loop in front of the hospital, University Hospital, but that University Drive is closed. It's under construction. And it's a mess during rush hour, as we know. So, at least temporarily, it has to circulate down Tiger, and then circulate back through Greektown, and then back through the student housing over here. There's 3,500 student residents here. There's 2,800 student residents here. I submit that if we provide the kind of service that they deserve, they will buy this service. And they'll use it to go to the library. They'll use it to go to Shakespeare's. That they'll go leave the library and go to Shakespeare's. And then go back to the library. That's how you get the 10 million riders. But you need to have buses running all the time. These buses are not going to stop except to allow students. You know, it doesn't go by Wabash Station. It goes within a block of Wabash Station. But these buses don't, the bus doesn't leave at 4. It leaves when it gets to that location, and anybody that wants off can get off, and anybody that wants on can get on. Then it leaves. That's the timetable. It's always moving. This may take one bus during a low time, like an evening. I think it may take 4 buses. I mean, that is what we should reach for. I think this is going to take 4 buses. FastCat has the opportunity to integrate with the other bus routes in the system. The red route's coming in here a block away. This could be a depot for transferring the basket from the one that goes out west. The ones that go north and east can integrate. They turn in here before they go to Wabash Station. They can connect here. The black and gold routes, which transfer hundreds of thousands of students, really can connect here. And this is how you integrate that system. This is the core. The hub of this system is really not Wabash Station. The hub of this system is this route, a route that's always going, always moving. CAT, call it what you want. Call it campus access transit. Call it customer-aligned transit. There are a lot of ways to look at it, but that's what the CAT means. Fast implies, you know, it's what it means. Got to be a 30-minute loop. I think it's going to be shorter. Two buses on that loop is 15. Three buses is 10. I don't know how many buses it's going to take. It's going to depend on how well we sell this. We can have one bus out there. We may need four buses. If this works, this will be a financially sustainable route. It will be customer funded. The orbiter, which is the derivative of this, is costing us $200,000 a year from the parking utility. That ends. That doesn't go on. So that has to change. We can make this financially sustainable on its own. An absolute key to this system is GPS capability. We've talked about that before. This app right here is on my cell phone for demonstration purposes. I have been promised by John Glasscock on three occasions that this route will be GPS enabled the 1st of August. That's only 2 months away. We don't have a lot of time here. This has to be up and running, ready by the 1st of August before the students get here. I have been promised, I'm saying that again because I want him to know that I have been promised that students will be able to download this app free onto their smartphones. And they'll be able to look at their residence hall when the bus is coming. And they'll know it's 6 minutes away or 10 minutes away or 20 minutes away. And if they go to Shakespeare's or wherever, they'll know when they got to leave Shakespeare's to catch the bus that's coming down 9th Street. That is a key to marketing this to students. We are going to have that, I have been promised. Again, focuses on customers, where they live, where are they going. That's what this is designed for. This is a proposal, and people that have better ideas, great. But this is a proposal to get students from where they live to where they're going. Customers, not students. And the ultimate goal of this, you know, we have really kind of developed an automobile-centric community. You know, I came up here in 1966. I had a car. I thought it was cool. But we don't want those cars at the College and Walnut apartments. We don't want them driving to campus. Yeah, they're willing to pay a dollar an hour to park in meters to go to class. Or they'll try to find a place to park in East Campus. You know, I don't know what the East Campus people think about all the parking that happens down there. But we don't want cars necessary. We want them to be luxuries. Have them if you want them. But we don't want them to be unnecessary luxuries. We want every student in this area who's going to be living within a block of this bus to be able to walk out when that bus is coming, get on the bus, and go where they're needing to go for extended hours. This, from a timing standpoint, got accelerated because of negotiations, conversations that we've had with the owners of Brookside Apartments over their pending rezoning. It's controversial. We know that. I would consider, I think the first conversation we had, I would consider it frank and direct. Would you agree with that, Mr. Kespel? But it's an evolved conversation into the fact that the owners of Brookside own the property immediately south of the new construction. They own it. They have every legal right to put apartments there. They bought it to put apartments there. Now, we can decide whether we want to make it all C2, or it's sort of segmented zoning right now. But there are going to be apartments there. Now, they are in a position of making Columbia, the downtown area, the student areas, a transit-oriented part of the community. They run a bus system. Brookside South has its own bus system, has its own GPS. They're ready to put a bus system here on these apartments. They already bought the bus. So we've had some conversations, and so they know how to run a bus system. So this is what we've come up with. I mean, it's preliminary. I mean, this requires staff, community input, council input. They're willing to cancel that bus because I don't want that bus competing against us, because that bus will not let any other citizens on their route. It would be an elite bus designed to promote their apartments. But that means if you live in the first ward, you can't get on that bus. It's going where you want to go, but it's going right past you. They've agreed to cancel that bus. They've agreed to pay $62.50 per student per semester. This is the same proposal we offered and continue to offer to apartment complexes on 63 South. We don't want those students driving on Red Quarry Road. We want them getting on buses. And we've offered a group rate to all those apartment complexes of, you know, number of beds times $62.50. We'll have the buses you need. And this, those buses now will be integrated with FastCat. That's how we get the revenue for the system. I mean, these are the customers. We got to go after them. We got to get their revenue into the system. Brookside will be paying the city about $80,000 next year. They, you know, look, I've seen, you guys hear what I hear. There may be 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 students living downtown 5 years from now. I don't know if it's sustainable or not, but I guess I'd rather them live here than 8 miles south of town driving their cars to Reactor Field. But there is a lot of activity for influx of students. The Brookside may have a couple of thousand students 2 or 3 years from now. They're building an apartment. They're going to be building apartments on the southwest corner of College and Walnut. You know, whether you like it, I think it could be an asset. If you don't like it, we can't. You can't stop it. They have other properties, and they plan to build some more. You know, let's assume 5 years from now they have 3,000 students living downtown. 3,000 students. I don't know what we're charging then, but at $125 a year. You know, that's $375,000 into the transit system from them alone. And it's 3,000 students who have buses going in front of their doors day and night. And that's how you create a sustainable system. That's how you pay for it. They've agreed to pay $10,000 for promotion. I'm not a fan of some of these advertisements. You know, we're getting $125,000 on ads, but you know, we're allowing ads on buses that we wouldn't allow on storefronts, right? So I don't know, you know, how consistent is that? But one of the things, the assets that the owners of Brookside bring to the table, you know, they're skilled marketers. You know, we need that. We need to market this bus route, and we need their help. We need their expertise. They run a bus system. We want them to help us market this, and they're willing to pay to help promote it. And we're not going to cover We want these black and gold, we want these to be the classic new design black and gold buses that we came up with. We want them to be classy. And we'll let them put a little, you know, Livid Brookside deal on it for whatever. That's it. Maybe a logo. We want a logo on there that has this website. Because I think the way to sell this is to have a student walk to class in the rain, see a bus go by that has a website that they download. That's how you make the sale. This is obviously an open system. This is a city bus route. It's not just for students. It's a city bus route. Anybody can get on it. It particularly, you know, we have to talk about how this works, but we want to be able to go out to those apartments south and west of town along Rock Roy Road and say, look, you know, you really want to buy this $62.50 pass because you can take the bus to Brady, get on Fastcat, go to Shakespeare's, just like that, because there's going to be buses going by every 10 minutes. And then when you're done, go back using your GPS and get right back to your apartment. We need their revenue. We need those customers. You know, we got to deal with the rezoning. They can build apartments. They basically have, what is it, C2, and R3 in the middle. If we deny their zoning request, they're going to put apartments in there, and they'll probably be a hodgepodge of apartments. They want C2. Frankly, I'm willing to support their rezoning if they make concessions to the city planning department. The city planning department has identified, I don't know, 8 or 10 concessions, have to do with sidewalks, access, turn lanes, that they have to make. I think they'll make them because this is good for them too. The fee structure, how do we pay for it? This is really a takeoff on the fee system we have right now anyway. You know, basically, if you want to buy individually a fee to use the bus system, to use Fastcat, it's $100 a semester. And, you know, we got to figure out how to do the group rates. You know, we did agree on $62.50 for an apartment complex that says I'll pay for all of my clients. That's what we want. We really don't want to have a ticket booth and be selling tickets one at a time. We want to be able to sell 500 at a time. That's what Brookside is willing to do. That's what we can offer on the Fastcat. That's what we can offer everywhere in town. And we can allow anybody all over town to merge, integrate with Fastcat, and get anywhere they want to go. I don't know, you know, if you got 2,000 students, maybe we can cut you a deal. You know, I'd like to have 30,000 students. Haven't figured out how to do that yet. I don't know what we can turn around with this, because it's the downtown orbiter is costing $200,000 a year, and it's going away. We're going to get $90,000 from this year from Brookside if this falls into place. You know, there's 6,000 students on campus that I think will buy this service. I don't know how many of them will buy this service. If we can get 2,000 students to buy the service, we've got $300,000. We easily pay for itself. And the point is, if we can make this part of the system financially stable, the rest of the revenue can help the other part of the system, because we're not going to get this revenue from the north and the northeast routes, because there is not a concentration of willing buyers out there. There is just not. So we're going to have to find a strong focal spine of this system that is so financially strong that when we build out on it, we extend our service, and we can afford a few losses out there. But we got to make this part so strong that we have the capability to do that. So what are the next steps? You know, we have to complete this agreement. We have to deal with the zoning. And really, they kind of go hand in hand. And I don't know how contentious this is going to be. I think, you know, I know there are people who don't want apartments on the southwest corner of Walnut and College. You know, there are a lot of things we want that we're not going to get. It's changing. They own it. They bought it. They have the legal authority to do it, and they're going to do it. So let's leverage what they're going to do for the benefit of Columbia. Let's leverage this into getting cars off the street. Let's leverage this into getting buses out there that all of us can use. And let's leverage into increasing our ridership dramatically. Obviously, did I say that John Glasscock promised me the GPS would be available? I think I've said that. Okay, I just want to be sure I said that. You know, I don't know how many buses that this is a staff decision. How many buses? I don't know how many buses we're going to need. If we don't sell any tickets, we'll have one bus. If we sell, if we can market this properly, we may sell 3,000-4,000. We may need four buses in the morning and the afternoon. I don't know, but staff has to be prepared for this because they all got to look alike. They got to say Fast Cat, and they all have to have GPS capability. We're in sales. We're a customer service organization. There is a willing a customer base out there of customers willing to pay for this service. We know that. We have not produced a level of service in this town that these customers are willing to buy, and we have to do that. And then we have to go out and we have to market that. And I know the city manager's had some great ideas about that, and that's something we intend to do. Obviously, August is a key month for that. It's only 2 months away, so we've got to move fast. We've got to figure out how we get rid of the tickets, how we sell the tickets, and then we have to deal with the integration of this with the rest of Columbia Transit. So I'm going to fall this back again. You're going to see this again and again and again. You see where we are, and you see where we can be, and where we can be is 10 million rides a year in Columbia. If we provide the service, we'll have that. Now, I'm done with this presentation. If anybody has any questions or comments, I'd be happy to entertain them. If anybody has any questions about the proposed map, let me know. This is a proposed map. It goes where the students live. Questions? Ian?
Has the University of Missouri Administration or the Missouri Students Association been involved in any of these discussions?
You know, we've had discussions with them. Frankly, we have been forced into a compressed timeline. We've been forced into a very compressed timeline because the conversations with Brookside, you know, have really come together over what they want to do at the southwest corner. I mean, that rezoning comes up in a week and a half. And so the way I view the owners of Brookside, they are customers, okay? They are buyers of our service, and they're willing to pay $90,000, and I like that. But we've been compressed into a very close time frame. We are not asking for any fee from the University of Missouri. This will be purely customer-based. If a student wants to buy a pass, we'll sell it to them. If the Tri-Delts want to buy, as a group, a pass for their group, we will sell it. And you can be sure we will be talking to each and every housing unit. And so this will involve absolutely zero expense or cost to the University of Missouri. The customer is the student. That's who we're going after. Andrew?
Is that $10,000 for marketing? Is that included in the $80,000 deal?
No, the $80,000 roughly is the $62.50 a bed for a year. It's about $80,000. The $10,000 is on top of that. So that works out to about $90,000. It might be $200 short of that, but it's roughly $90,000. And keep in mind, you know, they're going to be putting in, I think it's 430 beds on the southwest corner. Well, multiply 430 times 125, you're talking another $60,000 in potential revenue just from the new, from the one that they intend to build, that they will build. Yeah. And then, I tell you, there's a lot of people talking about student housing. I don't know when too much is too much. I don't know how to deal with this. The University of Missouri is growing. Student enrollment, we have a record freshman class next year. We are flat on graduating seniors in the state of Missouri. So we will not get more students at the University of Missouri because there are more students graduating from Missouri High School. We will get more students at the University of Missouri if we can continue to get out-of-state students to come into Columbia, and they are, or if we can get students who previously would have gone to a private school, see value in our system and choose to come to Columbia. I mean, it's sort of mind-boggling that the student body has grown 45% in 10 years. I mean, it's mind-boggling. And another freshman class record next year. And again, what I say to people is the leading indicator we have is them telling us how many students are coming next year. And the year that they announce that it's dropped off 5% is a year that a lot of people in the city of Columbia need to take a good hard look at what that means. But the trend is continuing. I think this will help continue that trend. Any other questions?
I wasn't asking before, but if the proposal is ultimately greenlit, how soon would this new route be initiated? Do we have a timeline figured out yet?
Look, the students get here. They're full force August 15th. I mean, we got 2 months. I mean, we got the buses. We can wrap them. You know, we can get the deal with Brookside. And I am told, did I tell you that John Glasscock promised that the GPS would be on board? Yeah. I don't know if I said that. But it doesn't take much to get these buses ready. If the GPS is here, we get this thing rolling when the students are here because the best marketing is on day one. These buses rolling where they're walking. With that free website for the free app, that's probably the best marketing you can come up with. And they're either going to be willing to pay for the service or not. But bottom line is, we're going to have a great system out there. And I believe they will be willing to pay for it. And I think that's going to make the whole system substantially stronger. Any other questions? Mr. Kespel.
We've been concentrating on apartment complexes. Actually, there are students who live all over town. Mm-hmm. And people who work at the university who live all over town. And we've talked about access points by other bus routes to the fast cab. Can you touch a bit on that?
Yeah, I think, Gary and I've kind of looked at this. How do we connect with this? Because this doesn't go into Wabash Station. This is always on the move. It goes within a block of Wabash Station. But there's two or three routes that swing right from college on the Walnut. So that's a big bus stop. There's going to be a lot of students getting on that right there. So that's an access point to FastCat, both ways. The red bus, the one that goes west, its access point. I'd like to see as much access at the Fifth and Walnut Garage as possible.
It's a block.
You guys move it. Just got to move it a block. Right? Just got them. And that should be easy to do. And obviously the black and gold route already goes to Brady Commons. So that becomes another node or a mini hub. So I think in dealing with the rest of the system, has got to be integrated into FastCat. This is the hub. This is the new hub of the system. Any other questions? Thank you. If you want to come up and take a look at the route, that'd be fine.